A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 66. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Thunderbirds. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, Thunderbirds are go here on British Invaders, as we're talking about this super marionation, basically puppet show from the 1960s, 1965 to 1966, on ITV. And quite a large production for a children's television series, as we were discussing in our last show, this huge concept of the International Rescue Organization flying into action to deal with disasters all around the world. When people are in peril, International Rescue come to their aid.
Yes, it was definitely a big, iconic children's show from its time. It ran for 2 seasons. The first one ran 26 episodes from late 1965 into early 1966. The second season only ran 6 episodes in late 1966. And the situation that came up there was that the series was being sold abroad. In fact, in many ways, it was targeted at the U.S. The main characters generally spoke with American accent, and it was meant to seem like an American show. And it was when things didn't go so well with the American networks for the second season, for American rights for the second season, that the show eventually was cancelled.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, as you say, it was very successful, very popular in a way, but at the same time, I think the costs of making these quite large episodes with the enormous budget for all the special effects and the model work, plus the number of models they must have blown up over the production. And I think those costs were just starting to overtake the revenues, and ITC at some point during the second series pulled the plug.
Yeah, it was, I think, expensive enough that the American sales were really sort of needed to keep it going. And it was a hit in the U.S. You know, it did very well. But when Lou Grade went to the U.S. to sell the second season, and it looked like all of the big networks were interested, and he was hoping to get this bidding war going and do really well on it, one after another, the networks pulled out, and in the end, none of the major American networks wanted to show it. And the story is that this type of thing happened on one trip to the States that Lou Grade took. And when he came back to the UK, the show was cancelled because they simply couldn't support it on just the British broadcast, which, of course, was too bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what happened, as you say. The plug got pulled.
Yes. Now, going into the stories themselves, we haven't talked about individual episodes or about how these stories were structured very much. And they certainly followed a theme. They were often a little bit similar to each other. There would be something that goes wrong, usually some new piece of technology, some vehicle that the military is using or that civilians are using, some type of new airplane or spacecraft or monorail or road laying machine, power plant, a new building, some new structure or new piece of technology would go wrong and people would be trapped, or something would go wrong and people would be in danger. And there would be a call that goes out from someone involved. International Rescue, we need your help. Some type of distress call. And the various Thunderbird machines and their pilots would go into action to do this elaborate rescue operation.
Absolutely. As you say, they would go into action. Thunderbird 1 usually streaking to the scene of the disaster, and then being followed by Thunderbird 2 and whatever other machines they would need. But if they didn't have the new technology falling apart as the plot device, then they would occasionally do espionage stories. And here they'd have either, again, the piece of machinery being sabotaged this time, or they would have the story or the plot device of somebody spying on Thunderbird's machinery itself, or the villain, the Hood, trying to find out the secrets of international rescue. And so in those episodes, they would often bring in Lady Penelope and Parker, who would get involved in the sort of the super spy aspects, the espionage and sabotage and trying to crack the mysteries there. And so there's a few episodes that base sort of almost entirely around Lady Penelope and Parker.
Yes, there certainly are some that do that. And often the Tracy brothers will come to rescue Penelope and or Parker as well.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes Penelope is the lady, the damsel in distress. She is, there is even an episode called Penelope in Peril or The Perils of Penelope. So, it almost harks back to old movie serials of the lady in distress being rescued by the Tracy brothers.
There are aspects of that. So a few key stories and episodes here. Trapped in the Sky was the pilot episode, that first episode. It was a story about this new aircraft, this big new passenger plane that ends up having a bomb placed on it by the Hood, of course, that is placed on its landing gear. So this is discovered, and this story is really about this rescue of getting this airplane to safety without having it land with its own landing gear and landing on its own. And it was sort of a big showcase for their model work, both in this airplane and the Thunderbirds and some of the gadgetry they use to catch this airplane and bring it down.
Yeah, the first time the world gets to see the Thunderbird machines and the first time they go into action, and rather exciting and thrilling it all is, particularly at the final scenes of them trying to rescue this plane.
They do talk about how no one knows who International Rescue is or what they can do, and in all of the later episodes, everyone knows and admires International Rescue and will call them directly or send out a call for them, which is always picked up from the space station Thunderbird 5.
That's right, yes. John, up in orbit, usually left up there by Gerry Anderson, apparently.
Yes.
Another episode, which I've already mentioned, was The Perils of Penelope. This is a spying episode with Lady Penelope investigating the disappearance of a scientist, and it involves a journey on a monorail train, which they were very fond of on Thunderbirds, monorails, and inevitably things go wrong and Penelope is in trouble and has to be rescued by the Thunderbirds. So that's quite a good episode to sort of set the format for some of the spying shows that would come along. And then a couple of others I'll mention that stand out. Day of Disaster, a space rocket is being transported to its launch site across a very large bridge, which unfortunately collapses. And then the crew, who rather bizarrely are being transported in the spacecraft across the bridge, are trapped underwater and have to be rescued by Thunderbird 4 in a very dramatic sequence. Quite a noticeable one. And then I also quite liked when we saw Thunderbird 3 go into action in space and do a space rescue. And there was an episode called The Sun Probe. Again, a new piece of technology, a new space vehicle designed to investigate the sun and to get very close to the sun. And it goes out of control and the crew are threatened and have to send International Rescue, send Thunderbird 3 to the rescue.
Yeah, that was a bit of a race against time episode where the new spacecraft, the experimental spacecraft, is getting closer to the sun, it's getting out of the area where Thunderbird 3 can go, so they have to catch up and get them before it goes too far.
Great stuff.
There was also The Man from MI5, which was quite a fun one in many ways. This was another Lady Penelope centered show, and it was a bit of a James Bond parody or, of course, the title, The Man from MI5, I presume being a takeoff of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It was straight ahead the Thunderbirds doing a 1960s spy show. And at times, a bit of a parody of the 1960s spy show, as sometimes Lady Penelope is successful and sometimes she gets herself into more trouble than she should. So that's sort of a neat one with all sorts of hijinks and captures and going across boats and things like that, which is kind of fun.
Yes, it's a classic 60s spy stuff, isn't it? And quite a fun episode. And then two more shows that I'll mention. My particular favorite of all time, a show called Attack of the Alligators, where scientists working in the Amazon jungle managed to release a chemical into the river, the Amazon River, that will cause the alligators to grow to incredible sizes and then attack this lonely house where they have their research facility. And of course, the Thunderbirds have to come to the rescue, but the Thunderbirds are themselves threatened by these huge creatures. And quite an impressive episode with the giant alligators being played by baby alligators, which fit in with the size of the models. And I think a variety of techniques being used by the crew who having to poke these baby alligators and make them act. But it's a very sort of like dramatic story and hugely popular with children. Very, very intense.
That may have been the greatest live action component of any Thunderbirds episode.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, the most live action in any episode was the baby alligators. And then there's a show called Security Hazard, which was basically just a clip show where they got to rerun lots of episodes or lots of key moments from previous episodes. They had a young boy who managed to stow away on board one of the Thunderbird craft and return to Tracy Island. And while they're trying to figure out what to do with him, they're basically telling him stories of all their previous rescues, which allows them, of course, to just rerun the clips from old shows until they come up with a slightly far-fetched way of returning him to his home and convincing him that he hasn't really seen the secrets of Tracy Island.
Well, this is, of course, what you do with Stowaway and to a secret organization, is you tell them all of your stories about all the things you've been doing in secret, right?
Absolutely, yes. They go to great lengths to say how secret it is, and then they tell him everything.
Very strange.
I shall require information about Professor Borander and the recent conference at Paris. Sir Jeremy and I are taking the night train to Andabad tomorrow.
Think you'll need any help?
Not till we get to Andabad. We just want to make a few investigations on the train. We'll be playing it pretty cool.
I bet you will.
Okay, Penny. I'll send Virgil with Thunderbird 2 and the equipment I think you might need.
Now, there were some spin-off efforts for Thunderbirds as well. There were quite a few, weren't there?
There's been loads over the years, Brian. Particularly straight away, after the show was cancelled, we got two big budget movie versions of Thunderbirds. So the second series was cancelled in early 1966, but the first film, Thunderbirds Are Go, came out in late 1966. And it had a big premiere, and there was a lot of fuss made about it. They extended the format to full feature-length film version. They had new machines, new technology, new puppet devices. So a lot of excitement and enthusiasm. I'm not sure it was the success that they'd hoped it would be. I'm not sure they managed to persuade as many adults to go and see the film as they thought would happen. You know, it still remained, I think, a children's show.
Getting adults to watch films of marionettes can be a challenge, I guess.
I think so, yes. I think that was the problem. But it was obviously successful enough for them to do it again in 1968 when they made Thunderbird 6, another great Thunderbirds film, both of which I've watched, and they are good fun, although they do suffer slightly from sort of stretching the format out to an hour and a half from the 50-minute slot.
And those were made by all the same crew and voices and model makers and so on, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same crew. It's the same Century 21 production team. More or less everybody returns. The actor who voices Virgil Tracy has changed, which is a slight jarring note if you're a fan. But apart from that, everybody else is back. and doing their bit again.
And of course there were comic books, as with many of these series. I believe this was a look-in comic, at least to start with, but there were Thunderbirds comics out there. I haven't actually seen any of them, but certainly I can imagine that would be a big thing. Eamon, did you collect any of the comic books from Thunderbirds?
I certainly had them over the years. I don't have them anymore, and I wish I did. But as you say, there have been several comic book versions of Thunderbirds on the British bookstands over the years, and it did crop up in the ITV children's magazine Lookin.
And I guess they followed the feel of the TV shows fairly closely, I would think.
Absolutely, yes. Although I think they were managed to rearrange the proportions of the characters, so the heads are not quite as large as they are in the puppet.
Right. There were also novels, of course. There were about half a dozen novels in the 60s, and then there were more children's books of Thunderbirds in the 1990s. So those were definitely floating around as well.
Yep. And also games and toys. We know of at least three video game versions of Thunderbirds from the 80s, the 90s, and from the 2000s on various systems. We haven't played any of them ourselves, but we know that they're out there. And if you have any insight into the Thunderbird video games, do come on to the Facebook group and let us know.
Yeah, there was one in 1989 on the original 8-bit Nintendo. And then in the late 90s, there was something for Game Boy Color. And much more recently, there was a PlayStation 2 Thunderbird game in 2007. And that was released in Europe, but the American release was actually cancelled.
Oh, right. More espionage for Lady Penelope to investigate.
I guess so. What happened to the American version of the Thunderbirds game?
And there was the fabulous toys. With any Gerry Anderson show, there would be the Matchbox or Dinky range of toys of all the vehicles, and they've been available and reproduced over the years. They show up on eBay, they show up in all the stores. They're great fun if you've still got any of them. Lots of them had the moving parts, particularly Thunderbird 2 with its various pods that would you could change.
Could you fit Thunderbird 4 into Thunderbird 2?
I think there was a larger Thunderbird 2 toy with a pod, and the little plastic Thunderbird 4 submarine would come out of the pod, I seem to remember.
Of course.
Yes. And as we mentioned before with the UFO toys from Gerry Anderson, you know, what happened, of course, to these toys is they were played with and various small moving parts would be lost over the years. So as always, having the complete original set is highly sought after now.
These were almost like action figures before there were action figures.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Before the success of collecting original action figures and Star Wars figures, we had the original Gerry Anderson toys, particularly from Thunderbirds and some of his other shows. And I should mention one other toy story, which is a great story for Thunderbirds, is that it was being rerun on British television in the early 90s. And in 1992, they brought out a toy version of Tracy Island. So a model of Tracy Island with all the various bits of moving scenery and sliding swimming pools and so on. And the success of the reruns in the early 90s prompted it to become one of those Christmas toys that in 1992, everybody wanted the Tracy Island toy. And of course, it was in short supply and nobody could get hold of it. And it became that most wanted toy of that year.
That's quite remarkable to do that off the back of reruns of an old show like that.
A show that was over 25 years old at that point, yeah.
And Thunderbirds did actually come back to television with new programming, although in a bit of a strange way. In the 1980s, there was an anime version coming out of Japan. It was called Scientific Rescue Team Techno Voyager in Japan, and it was Thunderbirds 2086 in the US. And it had quite a different look to it from the original British version, but it did follow some of the sort of ways of moving characters around that they had in the original. And I think some of that formula of the rescues and things was in there as well. And that was actually remastered in 2000 and put out on DVD and done with Dolby surround sound. And there's even a Blu-ray release of this anime version of Thunderbirds now.
Blu-ray anime Thunderbirds.
Yes. Very interesting, unusual combination, for sure. Several degrees removed from the original Super Mario Nation.
Okay, fantastic.
There was a proposal for a new Thunderbirds TV series coming out of the UK that was being talked about in the 1990s and in the 2000s. There was one trailer that was produced. It was a mix of CGI, computer graphics, and puppetry. And it circulated around in 2005 and definitely had sort of the homage to the original and lots of references there. It was going to be from Carlton Television. They were the ones working on that. But then ultimately Carlton merged with Granada. And when that happened, that whole plan disappeared and the entire project died. There was no continuation of that proposal to do the new TV series.
For shame. But we did get, in 2004, we got the live-action movie of Thunderbirds, which finally came along, much to the delight, or initially so, of all the Thunderbirds fans. Directed by Jonathan Frakes, Commander Riker from Star Trek The Next Generation himself, which had all the regular characters and all the machines and quite a fantastic special effects budget. Perhaps made the mistake of taking Jeff Tracy and most of the Tracy brothers and marooning them on Thunderbird 5 in space, and then concentrating on the younger characters, the youngest Tracy brother, Alan, and Tintin, and a new character, Brains, had a son called Fermat. And so those three sort of teenage characters had to try and save the day. Ben Kingsley is in it, rather memorably playing the Hood, as villainous as he ever was in the puppet show. And there are some good moments with Sophia Miles playing Lady Penelope and Ron Cook doing a marvellous turn as Parker. So they're worth the price of admission, possibly. I have to say, most of the film I thought was a disappointment, but there are some moments in there. There's also, Brian, there's one fabulous little in-joke where they cut from one of the human actors about to operate a machine, piece of machinery, and they cut away to a shot of a puppet hand operating the machine. So a little in-joke, a little reverse joke there for the fans.
That is a nice little reference. It seems like they took a lot of their cues for it from Spy Kids and shows like that rather than from Thunderbirds.
That's a good point, actually. I think they did try and cash in on the success of Spy Kids and aim at the younger audience. And perhaps if they'd stuck with the original characters, they might have got positive votes from some of the original fans. Who knows?
It does add an extra piece to all of the different things out there that are Thunderbirds, and that's kind of neat.
That's right, and there are lots of other bits of Thunderbirds out there. It's had influences, and it's been referenced in shows and films over the years. Here in the UK, it crops up as a sort of recurring theme for television adverts, and over the years, Thunderbirds have been used to sell car insurance and opticians and even soft drinks and chocolate bars. All sorts of different commercials using the Thunderbird characters. And we should mention a couple of other spin-offs, or at least influences. And an obvious film influence is the film, also from 2004, Team America World Police, produced by the creators of South Park. And if you've seen that movie and you know the Thunderbirds, you'll know how many of the sorts of puppet devices and the machinery that they have sort of referenced or been influenced by Thunderbirds.
Yeah, it was really meant to look like the Gerry Anderson Super Mario Nation kind of look.
One other show, which we didn't see, but we certainly wish we had seen, was a live theatre show in London's theatre district, the West End, in 1989, which was called Thunderbird FAB. And what this was two mime artists and actors who were obviously huge fans, who did a live show of them dressed in the Thunderbird uniforms, recreating the Thunderbird puppet walk. And then whenever they had sequences with the vehicles, they would wear these sort of model vehicles as hats as they sort of ran around the stage, and it sounds fantastic.
The photos look quite bizarre, don't they?
We do. We'll have to put a link to the page on the Facebook group so you can check out the photos of what must have been a very enjoyable looking show, done with a certain amount of tongue-in-cheek, but also I think an enormous amount of reverence and affection for the original show.
For sure.
Will you be wanting anything else today, milady?
Have you made the reservations on the night train to Andabad?
Yes, milady. I have secured adjoining Pullman compartments for yourself and Sir Jeremy.
Excellent.
So I think it's time we get into some of our own thoughts about the ups and downs of Thunderbirds and describe some of these things a little bit more as we go. So, Eamon, what did you like about the Thunderbirds? I know it's one that you've enjoyed for quite a while now.
Well, if we can get past the opening sequence, which is some of the best remembered television of my childhood, I do think Gerry Anderson's model work over the years has just been fantastic. And this enormous team of enthusiastic special effects guys and the model makers and Derek Medin's making up new techniques as he went along. It's great stuff. And, you know, the explosions, which we've already talked about, how much they loved blowing up stuff in every episode. It's just great. You know, I really enjoy that. And I think they do it very well.
I think for me, what sticks out as being entertaining in Thunderbirds is the rescues themselves. You know, a lot of the other parts of the stories can be things set up just to support that one sequence or two sequences of the rescue, and the model work they do for the rescues is very impressive, and they do lots of neat things with multiple moving vehicles interacting with each other and vehicles doing all kinds of strange things and all sorts of odd and unusual things there. For its time, that was pretty impressive. And even just looking at it for a bit of spectacle now, it's neat stuff. Some of them look pretty good.
Yes, they do. The rescues do look good. And as you say, they introduce quite a lot of tension and drama for a children's show. And the Thunderbirds are always up against the clock. And the rescue is, you know, something could go wrong at any time. And they build up the drama and the tension quite nicely in some of these sequences.
So what did you not like as much in Thunderbirds?
Well, I think we have to talk about the puppets.
Yes, we do.
That's right. And of course, you know, some people will probably have switched off as soon as we said puppets anyway. It depends how you feel about them. They do have particular problems. We have the large heads that we've mentioned. We have the hands with these rather strange close-ups of human hands because the puppets couldn't operate switches or open briefcases and things like that. So those are some sort of strange moments.
The puppets also, in my view, in most cases, couldn't show any kind of emotion at all. Occasionally, you could get a bit of tiredness or something in the eyes, but generally, it was like watching a wall, watching a face that just stays the same with the mouth flapping open and closed. And unfortunately, the voice acting in it often wasn't much better. So the characters were kind of dull in many cases. Not all cases and not all of the time, but a lot of them were sort of very plain and dull because you were looking at puppets and the voice actors did not do that much more with character or with emotion.
Yeah, as you say, and the faces are a slight problem. I think the puppets had two or maybe three different heads they could use, but I think it basically came down to it. They had a head that was smiling and a head that looked serious, and the head that looked serious was used for most of the show, and they probably put the head that was smiling on for the final sequence when they're back at Tracy Island and have completed their rescue. So the emotion is a slight problem, isn't it?
It's hard to establish different characters, you know, different character traits, and what makes these different characters different from each other in a lot of ways.
They also had the problem that they couldn't get the puppets to walk realistically. and that when puppets walk, they just look very strange. And of course, in all of Gerry Anderson's work, he would get round this by creating elaborate transportation devices which would move the puppets from one place to another without walking.
Hover bikes.
Well, yes, that's right. We mentioned the hover bikes, which were clearly, you know, brought in just so the Thunderbirds could go into their rescues without having to do the ridiculous walking. But also in Tracy Island, they would have fantastic bits of furniture that would spin round or flip over, and the puppets would slide down ramps or be transported on sofas into the heart of the Thunderbird machines. Anything to avoid having to show the puppets trying to walk.
Yeah, every Thunderbird had a strange sort of pilot mover to get the pilot from wherever they were or from the base into the craft, whether it was a moving sofa or a wall that spins around or these very unusual kind of things in there. And those were not too bad, but a little bit strange.
Yeah, absolutely. Very strange. But great fun. You know, I mean, every child, I think, has slid down a slide thinking that they were being loaded into Thunderbirds 2 or something.
I think I also have to mention here the issue of the stereotypes, which were really pretty bad in this. Lady Penelope and Parker were these sort of awful stereotypes of the upper class British person and the butler. And those ones you could say, you know, well, it was satire and has some value there, but it was a little unfortunate how far they went with those stereotypes. And then you had the character of Brains, who was really a pretty bad sort of science nerd stereotype. And the three Asian, or I think maybe Japanese characters, Kurano and his daughter Tintin, and then the Hood, the villain, who's Kurano's half-brother, I think. And the stereotypes there for the Asian characters are also pretty unfortunate, I would say.
Yes, I mean, we've seen it before in shows of this era that they did have these slightly odd stereotypical portrayals of characters.
I think it was even more emphasized in this than most other things I've seen from that era.
Absolutely, yes. It is a problem. As you say, there's also the episode where the hillbilly characters turn up in America, and their portrayal is really quite terrible, actually.
Yes, that's true. It certainly is. And the, you know, the American military, when they're involved, there are stereotypes there, and so on and so forth.
It was quite odd going back to watch it again that the episodes, they are long for a children's show, the 50 minutes. And in some of the episodes, I think the padding and stretching they had to do to move from the 25-minute slot out to a 50-minute slot does show. And there's an awful lot of time focusing on the vehicles launching and the vehicles hovering and getting into position, which in places does drag a bit.
Yes, and some of the takeoff sequences are things where they'll use the same sequence many times in many different episodes.
They love to show us the launch of Thunderbird 1 and Thunderbird 2, didn't they, in most episodes?
Yes, they do. Yes, we see the palm trees and the swimming pool moving aside to make way for Thunderbird 2 many, many times. I should also mention, as a bit of a problem here, is some plausibility issues. In most series, I'm usually quite happy to let plausibility issues go, but there are some pretty bizarre ones here. The aerodynamics of most of the Thunderbird craft are certainly among them. So you have Thunderbird 1, which is like a classic-looking rocket with small wings, which can take off and turn from vertical to horizontal. And with these tiny little wings and one big rocket on the back, go at great speeds and, you know, looks extremely front-heavy and extremely large for its wings. And from time to time, it even hovers as a fixed-wing aircraft with its rockets pointing back, which is a little bit bizarre.
Absolutely, yes. How they stay in the air is a little bit inexplicable in places. We can cope with the speed, but with the hovering does seem a bit strange, doesn't it?
Yes, and just flight in general. Also, Thunderbird 2 is this enormous craft with these tiny little wings on it, and it's a heavy lifting vehicle. So apparently it's this very large vehicle that can hold lots of weight and has these two tiny little wings sticking out of the side. So how some of these things stay up in the air is a little bit odd.
Well, it's due to brains and his fantastic inventions. That's what it is.
Well, yes. Well, again, how this one guy, brains, can come up with technology decades ahead of everyone else and create these amazingly advanced craft on the back of, I guess, one billionaire funding it, again, seems a little bit strange.
He has considerable resources, Jeff Tracy, hasn't he? He must be fantastically rich.
Yeah, it's quite odd how all this stuff just suddenly seems to be available to international rescue and to no one else at all.
Didn't bother us at all at the time, but looking back on it now, some of this stuff does seem very strange.
Well, it is children's television, and it is from that era, so that's part of what was going on and how things were being done at the time.
What went wrong, Brains?
Well, in collecting the sun probe, the solar ship had to steer onto a collision course with the sun.
Sure, but wasn't that part of the plan?
Yeah, it was, but I suddenly figured that the radiation level at that distance from the sun could interfere with the ship's control system.
So the solar nodes can't fire the retros
so
and break
So, if we haven't put you off with some of the problems of the puppets, and you decide you do want to check out Thunderbirds, it's available in Region 2 on a complete set of 9 DVDs covering all 32 episodes, plus lots of special features, documentaries about the production and so on, which I bought on Amazon for about £25 here in the UK. The two 1960s films, Thunderbirds Are Go and Thunderbird 6, are available on a single DVD set, which again is available on Amazon for about £5. And if you want to try the live-action film from 2004, also easily available, costs about £4, which is probably about £3 too much. But, you know, it is there. And all of those are available in the UK in Region 2 on the rental sites as well, on Love Film and other sites. So you can get hold of these things fairly easily.
There is also a Region 1 set. There is a 40th anniversary mega set, which is available for about $90 or $100 US. And the two 1960s films are available on separate DVDs for about $10 a piece. The 2004 live-action film sells for about $10. All of those are available on Netflix. I think they're reasonably easy to find in general. There was an earlier mega set with the entire series before the 40th anniversary one. And that is still floating around and sometimes sells for quite a bit less. So you might be able to find that as well. So I think it's time for our recommendations. Eamon, what do you have to say?
Well, this is going to be a tricky one, Brian, because, as you can tell, I love Thunderbirds. It's an iconic show from my childhood, and I had a huge amount of fun going back to watch the episodes again. But it's almost going to be the opposite of my Tomorrow People review. I'm almost going to say, if you watched Thunderbirds when you were young and loved it, then, you know, you owe it to yourselves to search out some of the DVD sets and watch some of them again. But if you haven't ever seen the Thunderbirds, it's going to be much more tricky because you will have this problem of it's a puppet show. And I would say if you've not come across it before, perhaps check out some of the discs on rental or maybe try one of the feature films on rental before you decide. But if you do nothing else, go to YouTube and watch the opening credits sequence because it's just fantastic.
I had not seen Thunderbirds until recently, although I was aware of it. I hadn't actually sat down and watched episodes of the series until recently. And I have to say it was one that I struggled to get through. It is a show with lots of problems. The way that it's set up and the puppets really make it a bit of a difficult thing to watch. And it's an interesting medium to see it, but I don't think the medium with the characters works very well. The actual rescue sequences, some of them are very good, and there were some neat things here and there, but all in all, I think it really doesn't stand up and maybe as a curiosity, it's worth taking a look, but I would not recommend jumping in to watch it as a major source of entertainment, because it just doesn't hold up that well, especially with the look of the characters and the puppets, and maybe even more so with all of the stereotypes that it has. I would consider recommending it as a children's show, as something to show your children, if it weren't for these awful stereotypes in it. So if you do want to try to see what your kids think, screen it first to see what those stereotypes are and know how you want to deal with that.
Okay, it's a tricky one.
Yeah, I think in some ways this is like the 1960s equivalent of the Transformers. It was the cool technology-heavy action show for kids at the time.
Okay, but if you've watched it recently, do drop by Facebook and let us know.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear what you think if you checked it out for the first time, or if you had seen it when you were much younger, either in the States or in the UK or Canada or wherever, and let us know what you thought of it then and what you think of it now. So, in summary, Thunderbirds was a super marionation series where all of the characters were depicted by marionette puppets being moved around. And it was about the Tracy family, Jeff Tracy and his five sons and a few other characters who had formed this group called International Rescue that was set up to perform these elaborate rescues of different kinds of vehicles and unusual things with the Thunderbirds, which were these extremely sophisticated, futuristic aircraft, spacecraft, submarines, and so on. And they would use all this technology to do these rescues, and occasionally to do sort of spy stories, and from time to time to defend them against a villain called the Hood.
Very good. A classic moment from the 60s may not hold up quite so well in the 21st century that it was set in. So next time on British Invaders, we're jumping to the 1980s to another classic television show, a mini-series from the BBC called Edge of Darkness, which had elements of nuclear conspiracy thriller. Interesting show, already generated some discussion on our Facebook group as to how much of a science fiction show it was. And we will get to that when we discuss it next time.
Yes, and it's actually quite different from the remake, the new film, which is just out called Edge of Darkness, which is based on it, but is quite different from it. And we are taking a turn from something light like Thunderbirds to a much darker and more intense show, Edge of Darkness. So it'll be interesting to talk about that one next time, for sure.
Absolutely, and very topical.
You can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com. And you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada saying FAB.
And it's Thunderbirds Are Go, and see you next time from Eamon in England. Thank you very much.